podcast studio in the Baltimore, Maryland worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Before we start, I want to thank all of you for your support of this podcast and all of our pods here at IL. We really enjoy putting these together for you. Enjoy the time and the discussions that we get to have. They're lots of fun. And you guys have rewarded us with your loyalty. So keep up the good work. Please hit that subscribe button and share it with friends. Also, don't forget to check out Mondays in the Crease podcast with Abern and Devitt, along with Friday's weekend preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix.
There's a guidance counselor. Oh, we started the show?
Yeah, we started the show. Okay. How was Mother's Day at the Dixon house?
It was very good.
Yeah?
Very good.
Did you do something special for Erica or your boys do anything?
So, Erica took my oldest Matt to a 9:30 game at St. Paul's yesterday morning. And then I had my younger son, Owen, that I coach his Rough Riders 2022 team. And we had a game at 10:30 in Columbia, Maryland. So
where'd you play?
Bland Air Park.
Have you played over to Troy Hill Place?
Yes. We played everywhere.
That's nice.
In Howard County.
I haven't been over there since they're ongoing construction over there. So where are they finished?
Two fields. I haven't been over there since last year when the boys played there. But there were two fields that went down originally, and the master plan, I think, is for five fields. And I don't know where they are in that progress because I haven't been back. We play both my older son as well as my younger boy play at Bland Air. And I think they've played at Rockburn a couple of times as well. But, big win for the Rough Rider 2022 yesterday, beating a longtime nemesis and very, very good lacrosse team, the API Diamondbacks, 11-5. First time our kids have beaten those guys in about 3 years. So it was a really, really solid team effort. And then Erica and my older son Matt came and met us up at Bland Air, and we hung out for a little bit and went home, and my wife went for a very long bike ride. That was her gift to herself, just pulling up stakes and going for a bike ride. I mowed the grass and got the house ready, and my folks came over later in the day, so we celebrated my mom and family dinner. And then we settled in.
What did you have to eat?
We had, what did we have? We had flank steak, grilled flank steak, green beans, some French fries, and then a couple of desserts. My mom made a banana cream pie, and my wife made a strawberry shortcake kind of freezer. It's called a freezer box, strawberry freezer box. So those were that was the menu.
I made almost an identical meal to that. At my house.
How was Mother's Day at the Flynn homestead?
It was very nice. We let mom sleep in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Got the prepared like the gifts and everything for her mom.
Yep.
And then we went to brunch at the Elkridge Furnace Inn. You've been there?
Absolutely. Yeah. My good friends Brian Bateman got married there years ago and have been back there a handful of times since.
Yeah, they did
it's an oldie but a goodie.
Their staff is amazing. Yep. They were really everybody there was uncommonly friendly and helpful. Like one of the guys, like a manager or something, took my kids out into the garden to walk them around. Which is actually a little weird.
Yeah.
Like pulled my 1-year-old out of his high chair. He's like, I'll just take him for a walk. I'm like, how about you don't?
Did you?
I had to follow him out there.
Oh, Amber Alert.
I guess I'm going out into the garden.
That's right.
But it was a lot of fun. And then we had a dinner in a house. My mother-in-law came over.
Great.
With my wife's mom. And
yeah,
it was real nice. It was, we did steaks, green beans, mm-hmm. did some roasted sweet potatoes,
ooh,
and strawberry shortcake kind of dessert.
So there you go.
So very similar menus.
Yeah. It's a springtime kind of outdoorsy menu, if you will.
It was really nice here yesterday, too.
Beautiful. Beautiful
nice
weather.
Nice today, too.
Beautiful weather. We did cards. We do cards. My kids are 14 and 12, so, you know, the gifts are kind of, you know, so cards all the way around.
So, Dix, how many of these games did you really get to see?
I got
busy
to...
Busy weekend. Sounds like you were at lacrosse games with the kids and stuff.
Yeah, DVR'd all of them. Haven't had a chance to watch each of them back yet in preparation for Memorial Day weekend. Westwood One Radio doing the games again with Dave Ryan and Jason Horowitz. So, trying to get a sense of what's happening. So, but we watched, I'm trying to remember. Watched a good amount of Air Force Denver. Watched Albany, Carolina in its entirety.
That was fun.
And then on Sunday, games again. Well, games. Saturday were games. The kids both played. And then Sunday games, watched Loyola Ohio State live, and then watched Yale Syracuse in its entirety. Yeah. So two good games. Four good games. I mean, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. I mean, I heard the Towson-Penn State game was a really good game. I haven't had a chance to watch that back
then. I watched a lot of that one.
Haven't had a chance. And two very similar teams. But, you know, hats off to Towson. You know, that senior class. It's third trip to the NCAAs, second consecutive trip to the quarterfinals. You know, I know they got the 91 team. 91? Yeah, 91 made the national championship game.
That was Rob Scheck.
Scheck, Carl Biernick, John Blatchley, Glenn Smith. And then 2001, Tony Seaman's third year at Towson, they made the NCAA championship weekend. Mm-hmm. Justin Tankersley, Brad Reppert, Keith Oldblodge.
Justin Barry, face-off man.
John Horrigan, I believe, was the goalie. That was a really, really good team.
Kachi was
he on that team? Yeah, I think Kachi was on that team. So. It's hard, man. You're trying to keep the year straight, but
They had a guy who was their attackman who transferred in.
Kyle Campbell.
Yeah, he scored a lot of goals.
Yeah, Kyle Campbell was excellent. Yeah, that whole team from top to bottom was stacked. And so you think about the runs that those two, classes have had. This run that this senior class, your Jack Adams and your Joe Siders and
Ryan Drenner and
Tyler Mays, you know, the run that they've had, that rivals any run in Towson history in terms of consecutive NCAA tournament appearances and wins and all that good stuff. So hats off to the Tigers.
So what I'd like to do, Dix, is we'll go through all of the first round games, including the playing game, talk about each one briefly, maybe even for some of the teams that lost, do a postmortem on their season and where they need to go. And then I want to talk about our inaugural Inside Lacrosse All-America media team that we put out.
That was fun.
Yeah, that we put out this for the first time this year, and it was released
first time ever
Sunday night.
First time ever,
yeah,
right?
First time ever. Yeah. We do a preseason team and a midseason team, so it made sense, and I'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll talk about, make some predictions for this weekend and do our give and go. So let's jump right into it. Bryant starts the NCAA tournament with a 10-7 win over Monmouth in what's a play-in game.
Yeah.
I hate that term. I feel like it cheats those two programs a little bit that they have to squeeze in like a early game. They find out their fate on Sunday night, and then they're on the Monmouth is on the road for that one. Bryant got up 9-3 and just cruised to a victory there, and they moved on to play the Terps. I guess the biggest thing out of that is again the Monmouth story. Those senior class. You know, it's the fourth year of the program. They go winless their first season. They make the NCAA tournament, win a conference championship their senior year. Hats off to that senior class and the coaching staff at Monmouth.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch this game, but just looking at the box score and watching some highlights, you know, obviously the job that Coach Fisher has done at Monmouth is second to none to win the MAC title, automatic qualifier into the NCAA tournament. 4 years into the endeavor is incredible. But Bryant, I think we talked about it on last week's show, just experience. You know, this group has been here before, and Tucker James is a guy who scored a ton of goals and was a freshman on that Bryant team that beat Syracuse up in the Carrier Dome. Correct, right? Yeah. 4 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, it was 2014.
Yeah, yeah. So again, trying to keep everything straight. But
that's why everybody thinks the joke is that Tucker James has been there for
Right. Has been there for, yeah, sure. So I think that experience paid dividends, and I think everybody was excited, myself included, about Monmouth advancing to the NCAA tournament for the first time. And I think, maybe discounted a little bit the advantages that Bryant had. But, Bryant's a very good team. Quarterfinalists a few years ago with that win over Syracuse, lost to Maryland in that quarterfinal matchup, lost to Maryland again here. But, just two mid-majors, that are getting better, and Bryant's won the Northeast Conference now a handful of times. Monmouth, can they continue their run in the MAC? And really, I think Mike Presser, obviously his story is very, very well documented. I think Fisher is a guy, it's only up and up. You know, Monmouth could be a stepping stone, and I don't mean any disrespect to the school or the program or the players or anything of that nature, but, if Brian Fisher can do that with a Monmouth, that's how you elevate yourself in the minds of bigger programs to put yourself in a position to maybe get a more prestigious job, and there aren't that many coaching jobs out there, you know, in men's Division I, 71 to be exact, right? So you kind of have to take your opportunities when you get them, and I could see Fisher maybe in the next couple of years getting an opportunity perhaps.
So you talk about Bryant playing Maryland. We'll talk about that game. Matt Rambo has 8 points. Tim Rotan's 5 goals. Terps build a 13-5 lead and sort of cruise to the victory. They looked really solid. What you'd expect from the number one seed in the first game of the tournament.
Yeah, and I think that this game went to plan, although it was much tighter at halftime than I had anticipated it being, 6-4, if I'm not mistaken. But Maryland did what they needed to do and put together an effort. You know, you want to talk about being there. You know, these guys have been there before. And last time for these seniors playing on the Capital One field at Maryland Stadium, they go out a winner, and Matt Rambo led the way. For my money, Matt Rambo is the best player in college lacrosse. If the tour time were to be given out right now, he would win it. Just based on the season that he's had, the competition that Maryland has played, and the performances that he turns in game in and game out. You look back at the Big Ten tournament, 1 goal, 1 assist in 2 games. Chris Sabia did a great job on him in the semifinal, and then Ben Randall did a great job on him in the championship. But I can't get that ground ball, you know, out of my head. with what Rambo did. Missed a shot, saved by Carey, ball goes to the sideline, Randall chops him from behind, he's on the ground, one-handed ground ball to keep it alive, and, you know, I just think Matt Rambo is the best player in college lacrosse, and Maryland just has strength all over the field. Hats off to Bryant, you know, down 13-5, scored the last 5 goals of the game to make it a 13-10 game, but, you know, and how about those Bryant uniforms? They're interesting, aren't they?
I hated them.
Yeah, they're like onesies or so, you know, like just like...
It was like they're wearing a T-shirt, ill-fitting T-shirt
with
a V-neck.
Yeah, that was like, you know, my old soccer uniform from back in like the U-12 travel days, you know, just that... I think they need to up the uni game a little bit.
There was someone who was texting, a friend of mine, who was a lacrosse fan, but he couldn't stop talking about the uniforms.
They were weird
out to me.
Yeah, they were strange. Yeah. And I've seen them before. It's just seeing them, you know, in that game. I watched about 5 minutes of that game.
They're
unique to say the least. But Maryland moves on. And
how about Rambo against Hopkins in his second to last game ever in College Park? He sets this school scoring record, and then he has a career high 8 points in his last game in College Park. So he goes out on
a very special
high note.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Dix, let's go to we'll just go in order now of the games. Towson gets a 12-8 win over Penn State in a game that I thought that they could win this game. I think that was one of the picks. By the way, I was 7-2. In these the 9 games that have been played, I think you were 5-4. Admirable.
Good for you.
But
what'd you win?
Bragging rights,
right? Just remember, I got to go to the Metallica concert this week, so I win the week, no matter what.
Good show.
I win the week. It was an awesome show. It was fantastic. It was great. It was. Why are you looking at me like
you?
That? Well, I mean,
that's all you have to say. Like,
but you want to be snarky.
I thought you were going to give some details of the show. Like, they played for 3 hours. They played an encore.
Well, I wanted to make sure I didn't offend you as a Springsteen fan. You know, I didn't want to, you know, step on your toes, because Bruce wouldn't have approved. There were no political messages. There were no like diatribes against government or.
Are you sure?
Society.
So while the concert's going on, I have you and Dan Ahern, who are both there, chirping at me. For no reason. I don't understand. I never said anything bad about Metallica. You are the one who are on the record saying that two of my choices, The Grateful Dead and Bruce Springsteen, absolutely suck.
Suck, yes.
I never said anything negative about Metallica. But the video that Ahern sent me, there's soldiers marching off to war on like a screen in the background as they're doing an intro. That's kind of
But that's what the song One's about. The One's about PTSD and stuff like that.
So they're not trying to make any kind of social or political statement.
They might, but they wasn't direct, and I appreciated that. James Hetfield didn't get up there and tell me how awful I am as a human being because I want to make a dollar. So, but I don't want to get into it because it was all in fun, you know, chirping at you, just trying.
I'm just sitting at home thinking, why don't these people just enjoy the concert and not worry about me?
Look, it was a quick photo, put it on Twitter, and I'm like, you know
what? Do you know how many people liked that comment when you're like, eat it, D-Fly? It was like at least 15 to 20 people.
Oh, that's not many. You think that's a lot?
Considering it was completely uncalled for, and I didn't know any of those people. I was like, okay, what's this all about?
It was all in fun.
Okay.
It was all in fun. And all look, right. It was, I think that was the week that we had our most highest rated podcast.
I know. We should talk about music and food more
often. Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to keep it, like, kind of keep it perpetuating.
Yeah, we got to keep that going. Keep going.
You know, get all sensitive on me, all right?
I'm getting sensitive.
So it was a fantastic show. And they played for 2.5 hours. But in addition to just their talent and their incredible musicianship and the sound and everything, it was how gracious they were. They were just really happy to be in Baltimore, which you can't say it for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They were really, really happy to be in Baltimore. And
it was their first show of a big world or North American tour.
Yeah, so we get them fresh.
Right.
And they had first played Baltimore in 1983 in support of their very first album, Kill 'Em All.
Where, Hammerjacks?
No, they put the bill up, the tour bill up, in the jumbotron, or the video screen that they had. Not on the Ravens, not in Ravens Stadium, because of redoing those video boards.
Oh.
So they were barren, which was kind of odd. You know, you never see the M&T Stadium without the
boards running.
Yeah. But
they run those boards all the time, by the way. We used to have meetings and things there, and like it'd be the middle of the day with not a single fan in the state, and they'd still have the news up on the board.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if you're
exactly.
Walking by,
well, shoot, might as well get your money's worth paying for them.
But I think just firing those up costs a little.
Costs a couple of bucks. But anyway, it was their graciousness. After the show, they were throwing guitar picks out to the audience and drumsticks.
Everybody
and,
does that,
right? But they were hanging like 5-10 minutes, just going around the stage, shaking fans' hands and. Little pictures and that kind of stuff. So I thought that was really, really cool. Also, if you haven't seen it yet, you could Google it. They did a video thank you to Baltimore. To Nothing Else Matters is the back, but it's like a harp. It's played on a harp. And it's just basically like a photo essay of Baltimore. And then it also shows snippets of them, like, you know, the hospitality that the Ravens showed them, rehearsal, and then them coming out to the show on last Wednesday. So I thought it was like really, really cool. It's about 5.5 minutes long, and it's really, really neat. Shows you how cool of a city Baltimore is. Very photogenic, very photogenic.
All right, Dix, let's get back to the lacrosse talk. Towson with a 12-8 win over Penn State up in Happy Valley. Started the weekend off the Saturday games. Joe Cedar has a great game.
Joe Cedar.
My apologies. Joe Cedar, 4 goals, 2 assists. Ryan Drenner, 2 goals, 2 assists. Mike Lynch, 2 goals, 1 assist. Back and forth game. Tigers take a lead early in the fourth quarter, get up 3 goals, and just hang on for a solid 12-8 win.
Solid is right. You know, Penn State, a team that had a good season, but a lot of question marks around it. Strong RPI, strong strength of schedule. But when you look at those quality wins, you know, their biggest takedown of the season was Ohio State. Out of conference, just the way it played out, they didn't really get any quality wins, per se. But this is Penn State's a team that I've loved watching them this year. Very, very exciting. And one of the main reasons I loved watching them is because they go 6-7 deep offensively at the midfield, and that midfield was completely quelled by Towson's rope unit. I had a chance to call 2 Towson games this year. Their loss to Denver, and their final regular season game of victory over Hofstra. And when you talk about Tyler Mays at long stick midfield, and you got Jack Adams and Zach Goodrich as your shorties, those guys are awesome. I mean, they're very, very good. And they did a great job on Mike Sutton Ryan Keenan. I mean, no goals out of the midfield for Penn State. All the scoring was done by the attack, which has been fantastic all year. I've been saying all along, you know, really, I think collectively as a threesome, Penn State does have the best attack in the Big Ten, with all due respect to Maryland, and Ohio State as well. But, you know, Grant Amon, 3 goals, Mac O'Keefe, 3 goals, Nick Aponte, 2. But really, you know, Towson did it with defense, and that's what they've been built on, and that's, you know, how they get the job done. And I thought they did a fantastic job. You know, Alex Woodall was good at the faceoff. He wasn't great, but he was good. And Matt Hoy, their goaltender, 9 saves. did a great job, and that was a huge question mark going into the last regular season game against Hofstra. Hoy won the job that week in practice, played well against the Pride, played well in the CAA tournament, took home MVP honors, and then plays well in this first round game in State College. So just a great all around team effort for Towson.
Yeah, Woodall looked like he tweaked his hamstring or hurt at the end of the game.
He got hurt at the end of the game, so we'll have to keep an eye on his status as they enter the quarterfinal round this week in Syracuse.
That's a big
if
there.
Huge.
Moving on, Duke destroyed the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays in embarrassing fashion. 19-6. Justin Guterding, the one guy you really need to shut down, has 10 points. Joey Manana has 4 goals. Lowry has 3 goals. The Blue Jays at times look like they couldn't even throw and catch. They have 20 turnovers. I don't even know where to start. I guess we could start with their...
I think you start with Duke. You got to start with Duke.
They played great.
You got to start with
Duke.
But
when you have a grad student goalie who's going to start the game and he's ineligible, I don't even know how that happens. I don't understand that.
If you're looking for answers from me, you're not going to get
it.
I got no clue.
You know how... I mean, I don't know. It ruined my Saturday.
Really?
And it was over. Yes. I was in a funk for like the next 6 hours or so because of that game. And it was depressing.
It was ugly. It was ugly.
It really was.
And
it was like a cold, rainy Saturday.
Right.
And I was just, it was a gray day.
Well, look, I had Hopkins against Ohio State in the regular season in a very hard-fought game that eventually the Buckeyes won. And then, you know, obviously I follow Hopkins. They're on TV a lot, which makes it great to study them and opponents. And then I had their game against Maryland, you know, with the rivalry game on tap, potential number one seed in the Big Ten tournament, and they came out and just got smoked. I mean, they just got run off the field down in College Park that night. So you're like, okay, all right, well, happens, right? Happens. Then you go to the semifinal game against Ohio State in Columbus, and they're down 4-0 before they can even know what hit them. And you're like, okay, this is not good. You know, obviously Brock Turnbull was struggling in between the pipes. Gerald Logan comes back in. Hopkins fought. They did fight back. They did fight back to lose 15-13. It's like, all right, well, they showed some heart and some fight at the end of the Ohio State game, and all right, Duke's a very good team. I actually thought Duke deserved consideration for a home game, and you come to find out that they were the last team in, I think, according to the NCAA selection committee. And Hopkins looked good in the start, I guess. I haven't been able to watch the game.
They got up 2-0.
2-0. And
you got a goal from Crawley and a goal from Shaq Stanwyck, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, things are looking good.
Off to a good start.
And then from there, it just went south in a big way for Hopkins. So I think, you know, for the Blue Jays, you've got to look at everything. Yeah, I think you got to look at everything. The defense has not been good, was not good down the stretch, I should say. They were good at spots this season. You know, goaltending is obviously a big concern now. Gerald Logan is gone, even if, you know, he's a grad student, right? He's not coming back in of eligibility. Will Ryan's gone. Brock Turnbull's your returner. And, you know, we talked about Jacob Stover having PTSD from the semifinals last year. How do you think Brock Turnbull is going to be mentally going into the summer, heading into fall practice? So, obviously, you've got some big-time concerns between, you know, in the net for Hopkins. You do have a freshman, Jacqueline, who didn't play. I don't think he played at all this year. But that's a huge concern. And this is the second year in a row where Hopkins' first-round game has gotten their doors blown off.
Blown out.
I mean, just game
over.
It
was the worst loss at Homewood Field since 1954. That's a long time ago.
Dave Petromile was quoted as saying 19-6. I it felt like 30-6.
Yeah.
And I've been there as a coach. I mean, albeit on the youth level, where you're just getting smoked and there's nothing you can do. But, it's a tough pill to swallow for Hopkins to you know, have so much pride and so much tradition in a home game. You know, you look at the numbers in a home game, and they had wins over Loyola, Carolina. You know, they beat Penn State. They beat Rutgers. But this team wasn't playing well down the stretch, and they certainly didn't play well on Saturday at all. So a lot of question marks surrounding the Blue Jays. One thing that is without question is Duke is a bona fide contender for the national championship. They're very, very good. And Justin Gutterding, 4 goals. Joey Manown, your boy, band, you know, was dancing all over Homewood Field with 4 goals as well. I just think that this team is a typical John Donowski team, but it's not a typical John Donowski team.
Explain.
When you talk about your Janad Donowski teams, especially the national championship vintage, they always had headliners. You know, Jordan Wolfe, Miles Jones, players of that ilk, and would still drop 2, sometimes 3 games in February. And then they would come down the stretch hard and strong and successful. This group is really, I mean, I know they have a number of Under Armour All-Americans, but they don't have any player of that ilk on the team. You know, you don't have a Jordan Wolfe. You know, you don't have a Max Quinzani. You know, you don't even have nowhere near like a Zach Greer or a Matt Donowski. And I'm talking more recent vintage. That's a little unfair to go back into the late 2000s. But this team, they just get the job done, you know.
Maybe Gutterding is that guy.
Maybe, but he's not in any discussions for Tuaratan or for All-American. I mean, when you talk about All-American at attack, I mean, you are jammed up at that position. You know, when you talk about Fields, Rambo, Spencer, Reeves, Sowers, Malloy, Gutterding, Canizero, Moore, like those are the top 9 attackmen from the inside lacrosse, which we'll talk about, media All-American. And then, you know, your HMs are Josh Byrne, Zed Williams, Nick Aponte, Chris Cloutier, Trey LeClaire, and Jeff Teat. Come on.
Yeah, there's some good attack. I mean, it's like
the marquee
right
position, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, is Gutterding that guy? Maybe. But he's not like an on-ball guy. He's not going to blow by you. He's not a huge – he just gets the job done. You know, he's off-ball. He's smart. You make a mistake, he makes you pay. So, hell of a player. Hell of a player.
Yeah. Well, they had our number one ranked recruiting class. And several of those guys are making a difference. Joey Manown, JT Giles Harris on the defensive end.
Sure. How about the faceoff man? I mean, the faceoff man doesn't get any love. Rowe. I mean, Kyle Rowe was 18 out of 24 on Saturday.
Yeah,
and he's been good all season long. And I think they're getting much better goaltending this year as well with Danny Fowler. You know, he's improved a lot. I think you know where I'm going with this. Player development. You know, Duke is one of the best, if not the best, in the country at developing talent, developing players from birth to graduation. From the first time you set foot on campus till when you graduate, these guys might be the best.
Well, they'll have an interesting matchup coming up this week, and we'll find out. We'll talk more about them a little bit later. Let's move on to the 5 o'clock on Saturday game. Denver, 17, Air Force, 10. Trevor Baptiste wins 23 out of 31, has 18 ground balls, 4 pios with 4 points.
Scored 2 goals.
Yeah. Neither team got really great goaltending.
Yeah.
Which seems to still be a bit of a weakness for the Pioneers as they move forward. But this is kind of what we expected the Denver offense to look like.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, this can be summed up very succinctly. Trevor Baptiste gives that offense so many possessions, and he's such a great player. You know, am I sold on him being a Tuaratan finalist with just being a specialist? I don't know. We talked about that before, but I mean, he made a little bit more of a believer out of me on Saturday with just a dominant performance, a couple of goals. And when you get that many touches, you have to make some things happen. And that's exactly what Denver did, winning 17-10. You know, I think when you talk about Denver, the concerns are the goaltending. You know, we've talked about it throughout the season. Alex Reddy is good but not great. And, you know, I saw him live against Towson where he was pretty darn good. He made some saves early in the game that allowed Denver to get out to a lead, and they mixed the match kind of Connor Canizero a little bit to get other guys involved. Midfielders are starting to run by people, which is a great sign, and they have been running by people since that Towson game, because the Towson game was a week after the loss to Ohio State where everybody and their mother just thought Denver was trash, quite honestly. And Bill Tierney mentioned it that week, you know, talking with him. He's like, nobody thinks we can dodge, nobody thinks we can score without Connor, so we're going to do some things different, and they did. And that's kind of been, you know, set the tone for the rest of the season. But I think if you're Denver, you're concerned about your goaltending, and you're kind of concerned about your half-field offense as well. Little little too aggressive at times and not great off ball, you know, creating offense a little bit for the opposition. But, you know, when you have a face-off guy like Trevor Baptiste, you can cover up a lot of those blemishes pretty good.
For Air Force, they get three goals from Grant Gould. Matt Schwartz has two goals. Chet Dunston, two goals. Chris Walsh with two assists. Another good season for Air Force. SoCon
sure.
champs the last 2 years. A lot to be proud of for the Falcons.
You know, the SoCon is becoming a ridiculously competitive conference with Richmond. You know, you've got Air Force obviously won the championship. High Points, been to the NCAAs.
Furman
had a
team.
Nice conference season and maybe got a little bit of a taste. And Jacksonville's an up-and-comer with John Galloway there. They made the postseason tournament. So, you know, this is a really good conference. I mean, Richmond, we're going to talk about it. I mean, mm-hmm. they've got two first-team All-Americans on the Inside Lacrosse Media All-America list. That's pretty special.
It's a big deal for the program.
Now they graduate. We'll see what comes in after them. But, you know, Air Force, I've enjoyed watching Air Force play the last couple of years. I really got introduced to the program a few years back when we did the Mile High Classic on ESPNU, courtesy of Inside Lacrosse. And Loyola went out there to play Air Force. Got to know Eric Saramet and his players a little bit. But, you know, I'm going to miss Chris Walsh. He's a kid I've really enjoyed watching play the last couple of years. Tremendous talent, great leadership. And, you know, look, it's a service academy. And I don't mean that in that way, but, you know, Air Force has gotten very aggressive with recruiting. They got a number of verbals early in, you know, as does the Naval Academy, as does Army. And I think they develop their kids too. So, you know, in this game, you just couldn't overcome, you know, Trevor Baptiste basically, and it was competitive. You know, this game was 6-4 at the half, and Bill Tierney, I heard he said, look, and he didn't think his guys were playing well, and he went into the locker room and said, I can sit here and rant and rave and tell you how bad you are, or you can just go out in the second half and shoot more, and we'll see what happens. And he just walked out, and they scored 7 goals in a pivotal third period. So hats off to Air Force. Great season. Denver moves on, and you know, they look strong. They look like they've recovered from that loss to Marquette in the Big East semis.
Another faceoff guy who was dominant and helped his team immensely was T.D. Erlin of Albany. In the marquee game of the night, Albany gets a 15-12 win over defending national champs. Game starts with an incredible Chris Cloutier goal.
Yeah.
And then the Great Danes go on a huge run.
I tell you,
11-goal halftime lead,
man.
And Erlin won every faceoff.
Yeah, I haven't seen. It's been a long time. If I can't remember seeing a game like that where it's 14-3, and then Carolina scored what, 9 straight goals
in
the second half?
9 straight.
And then you're just feeling the whole time. You're like, Albany just needs one to drop.
I think Albany was 0-15 shooting.
Yeah, they just need one to drop.
With turnovers,
and that's going to get the bench going. That's going to get spirits pumped up a little bit. But it didn't come till late. But man, what a great atmosphere! I mean, crummy
incredible.
Weather,
terrible
weather. I mean, that was just awful.
Kudos to the Capital Region fans,
the Hardy fans, absolutely
unbelievable. So they set a first round NCAA Division I attendance record with 6,472 paid attendance in a pouring downpour for most of the game. That's diehard fans,
big time,
and they were treated to an incredible game.
Yeah. No question. So, you know, a little too late, too little too late, I guess. But if you're Albany, you know, national audience gets to see Connor Fields in prime time, and he was terrific. Chris Cloutier, his last game, you know, wearing the Carolina blue, he didn't disappoint with a couple of crafty goals. He finished with 5. But what I really like, and we talked about this before, you get some complimentary scoring from you know, from Albany. Bennett Drake is a guy's name. It always comes up in my, you know, whenever I talk Albany or write about Albany. And Fields, like I thought Bafani did a pretty good job on him when they had to go man-to-man. Playing a zone on Albany, I don't know why they played zone on Albany, quite honestly. I think the athletes that Carolina has, you know, and just the you know, the role that the Tar Heels were on coming into this game, having won the ACC tournament, I don't know why they decided to play zone against Albany. But the Danes made them pay, picked them apart, got out to the huge lead, and then Carolina just kind of, you know, cut the shackles off, if you will, and played a tremendous second half. I mean, had they have pulled that one off, that would have been maybe the greatest, you know, choke in the history of NCAA tournament lacrosse. I think about it was 83. Hopkins had that 12-5 lead on Syracuse in the national championship game in the middle of the third quarter and lost. I'm trying to think of any other, like, huge, you know, 06 Hofstra led UMass by 5 goals going in at the start of the fourth quarter, lost to the Minutemen, and the Minutemen went on to go to the national championship game that year. Sean Morris and players like that. But great game. I mean, you know, great game for different reason. It's like all Albany, then all Carolina, and then Osika sticks the 15th goal for Albany and kind of ends it. But great atmosphere.
Unbelievable. And for this class of North Carolina players that go out with an ACC championship, an NCAA championship.
Those guys got the monkey off the program's back.
Yeah, which
they got
was huge.
Big time. I mean, it had grown into a full-size silverback by the time.
It is,
you know,
almost, it's hard to believe with the talent that's gone through Chapel Hill that they hadn't been to the Final Four. They hadn't made it to Memorial Day weekend since, what, 1993?
93, yeah. And I tell you, man, my time at Hopkins, we were 0-5 against Carolina. Lost every regular season game all 4 years, including the 93 semifinal game. We were up 3 or 4 at half, feeling pretty good about ourselves, and then they just, you know, Tar Heels came out in the second half and smoked us. So I'm telling you, I remember in 94 when they lost in the quarterfinals. It was almost like it was shocking, you know. And then from there on out, you know, it just kind of became habitual for them to miss.
It's hard to believe that they never made it to Memorial Day weekend for 25 years.
Long time.
Yeah.
Long time.
But this team, you're right. This is the senior class. They or last year's as well. Like these, won the champions.
Sure,
they won the title, and pulled off an improbable ACC championship this year. So, well done.
Good season. Tar-heels. Good season all the way around.
Dix, before we get to the next game, I want to talk about our good friends at Sideline Swap, who support this podcast. Sideline Swap is where the lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or you can snag unique gear from colleges and the pros, even some high schools. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. You list it in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. You know what to do? You visit SidelineSwap.com.
That's what you do.
Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's Sideline, SWAP.com. Sideline Swap. So Sunday started off with a noon game. Notre Dame at home beats Marquette 15-9. Game was really decided in the second, third quarters when Notre Dame scored 9 goals. Marquette made no saves in either second or third quarters. And for the game, Marquette had some opportunities, but they went 0-4 in the extra man. I guess the big news is that Ryder Garnsey and Perkovic played.
Right.
And they still got scoring from other guys.
Well, and they weren't needed. I mean, not that they weren't needed, but I think their presence on the field just opens things up exponentially for Notre Dame. I have not been able to watch this game back just yet, but Brendan Gleeson and Brendan Collins combined for 9 goals. You know, Gleeson 5, Collins 4. You always talk about depth of scoring, complementary scoring with Notre Dame, and the Irish got it on Sunday against a Marquette team that has played Notre Dame very, very hard and very close over the last couple of years. I think the familiarity with the opponent helped Notre Dame with the game planning, helped Marquette as well. But they – and Notre Dame didn't – you know, they played last week in the loss to Army without Perkovic and Garnsey. So they got life without, you know, their two big, you know, best offensive players. Obviously, it was a loss, but it's a loss that really didn't hurt them at the end of the day. They still got a home game. They got an opponent that they were very, you know, I want to say comfortable with. Familiar with, I should say, and they get the W. So, you know, a good job by Notre Dame. Cole Blazer has been a hero for Marquette throughout the season and a big reason that they won the Big East and got into the NCAA tournament. But, you know, he had a rough day yesterday for sure. But I also think Notre Dame did a nice job of getting quality shots, working against the Marquette defense. And, you know, just looking at the box score, you know, you can see that Collins and Gleeson stepped up and had a great day.
So this Marquette senior class, we want to talk about them. They went back-to-back Big East championships.
That's impressive.
Yeah, maybe really impressive. Each year.
Especially when you consider what they lost last year. B.J. Grill on defense and the long stick midi, the long hair, forget his name. Liam Burns, I think, is what it was. And I apologize if I'm getting his name wrong because he's a hell of a player. Joe Amplo is a guy that is going to be a hot commodity this summer. I think you got the openings at Michigan. You got the opening at Delaware. Cornell's not an opening with Milliman taking over as the interim coach next season. But, you know, you never know. I'm hearing grumblings that some other jobs might become available. Would they interest Amplo or not? I'm not really sure. But I do think that if I'm Michigan and I'm Delaware, I got him on my short list of candidates to interview. So we'll see how it works out.
So the Fighting Irish move on, and they will face
Denver.
Denver.
Yeah.
Next Pioneers. Saturday at Hofstra. Ohio State beats Loyola 7-4 in a game that was a low-scoring defensive slugfest.
Yeah.
I thought that there would be a little bit more scoring in this game. I did think that Ohio State could and would win this game by several goals. I just didn't think it would be a 7-4. I thought it might be more like a 14-8 type of game. Ben Randall, your man, he was great on Pat Spencer.
My man.
You love that kid.
I do love his kid, but he's my man all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was held, Spencer was held to 1 point.
That's special.
And
that's a special
Loyola,
effort.
I mean, Loyola only had 4 goals, all unassisted. They made them dodge, try to score. Great defensive game plan by Nick Myers and his staff.
I think this speaks to Ohio State, their ability to beat you, kill you softly. You know, with a 7-4 win like this, or they can run you off the field the way that they took care of Denver earlier in the season. I think you got to give a lot of credit to Loyola and their defense and the way that they played. But you know, for Ohio State, the two biggest things that stood out to me was goaltender Tom Carey, 12 saves, senior, great job, and then Ben Randall, the job that he did on Pat Spencer. Pat Spencer is fantastic. If Matt Rambo is the Tourettan winner, Pat Spencer is going to be the runner-up, I think. I mean, and that's no disrespect to Connor Fields, but again, you know, Spencer is just the guy's incredible vision and two-time Patriot League Offensive Player of the Year, and he's only a sophomore. For Ben Randall to hold him to an assist is incredible. And I know Tom Carey is a big reason for that, but just the one-on-one with Ben Randall and him winning that matchup was critical for Loyola to get the W. You know, I thought Loyola had some really good scoring opportunities, especially in the fourth quarter with some good looks on Cage, and they just missed the goal. And that's what a good goalie does to you, though. He gets you thinking. And, you know, you try to be too fine with your shots. And, you know, so Carey and Randall were the story of the game for me, for the Buckeyes.
Yeah. Freshman Trey LeClaire had 3 goals. He keeps his late season success going. And the Buckeyes move on, and they will face Duke next Saturday, kicking off the weekend.
And you know, real quick about Loyola, a team that went to championship weekend a year ago. Defensively, they turned in another great effort. You know, if you go back to the Patriot League, really the Army game in the regular season, they gave up 6 goals in that game, I think. Gave up 3 to Holy Cross in the Patriot League semis, 4 to Army in the Patriot League championship game, and then only 7. To Ohio State in the first round of the NCAA tournament. You know, if you're giving up those numbers, you only give up 7 to Ohio State, you know, you're thinking, okay, we got a chance to win this game. But then that's when you know, Ohio State's identity over the last few years has been more of a defensive grind-em-out team, and that defense is terrific for the Buckeyes. But you have to give credit where credit is due, and I thought Loyola defensively played a really, really nice game, and obviously they fall short of their goals. But Brian Sherlock graduates, but Spencer's back. You know, you got some pieces there that Loyola can put together and make another run in 2018.
Last game of the weekend, also a fantastic game in primetime on Sunday night. Syracuse pulls out another 1-goal win, the 11-10 win over Yale. Back-and-forth game, great atmosphere in the dome. Lots of fun to watch this. Syracuse now 9-2 in 1-goal games. They just keep doing it. And Evan Malloy was fantastic in goal for the Orange.
This reminded me of the ACC tournament from 2016, where Malloy was the reason that Syracuse took the ACC championship, and I thought he was terrific again last night. This game was back and forth. I thought Yale got the upper hand in a couple of situations, but you know, when they got quality shots off, Molloy was there to make the stops. Couple takeaways here. You know, Sergio Salcedo is tremendous. I mean, he's really, really good. And that goal that he scored at the end of the second quarter, right before halftime, I think, with time running down. I can't remember what he scored. Yeah, an end of quarter goal.
That was
huge.
Two.
Yeah, huge goal from Salcedo.
Yeah, that was huge.
To get that score at the end. Well, I can
you think about that actually. Goal, and then there was the other
first
goal.
Quarter. End of the first quarter, the first made quarter? It 3-3.
Oh,
made
it 3-3. Tied it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You think about that goal, and remember the goal where Yale was scrambling to clear the ball,
yeah,
and was intercepted, and they passed it into Jordan Evans, scored right in front of the cage.
Yeah.
You think about a couple of plays like that, and that ends your season,
yeah,
if you're Yale. And that's going to be tough.
They had one in particular goal that they gave up. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it was a missed ground ball to the side of the cage after, I think it was a save, loose ball, shorty for Yale goes to pick it up and just geeks it. Just misses it. Syracuse picks it up. 1-2-3 passes, goal. You know, and you could sense it. You know, at 8-6 when Gaudet made it 8-6 for Yale, and then Cuse made that run. Mariano scored. Actually, Trimboli scored with a second left in the third period too. So you had two buzzer beaters for Syracuse. And in one goal games, those are the huge differences. So. Syracuse, man, they keep living dangerously, and everybody's thinking, all right, you know, we keep saying all year, Syracuse got to win the national championship, they're going to lose in the first round of the NCAAs. All right, they're going to lose in the first round of the NCAAs. Yale's going to knock them off, and they found a way to win. The other takeaway for me is Ben Reeves. What a performance.
Man, was he good.
What a performance, and you know what he's doing. You know, he sets you up at X, comes around, goal line extended, and then he uses those long arms and great shooting to whip that
and
lefty.
Quick release.
Man, he almost single-handedly pulled it off for the Bulldogs. But again, Evan Molloy down the stretch, strong, good saves, difference maker. Syracuse is in the quarters. And I think that was mentioned, I think Paul Carcaterra mentioned it on the broadcast, that if this team doesn't get the championship weekend, they'll be the first class since 1982, Syracuse, not to go to national semifinals.
That's and ridiculous.
That is crazy when you think about it.
That's a history of success.
It really is. It really is. But you don't want to be that class.
No.
You do not want to be that class. Especially, you know, what was it, 22 straight national semifinals for Syracuse before that was broken in 2000, we'll say 05, 06, right around that time frame. 05. 05 is when they didn't make it, and they made it back in 06. But anyway, just a gritty effort by the Orange.
All right, Dix. We're very pleased to announce the first ever Inside Lacrosse Media All-America team.
That's neat.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It debuted on Sunday night. They put it during the primetime game on ESPNU, halftime of the Yale-Syracuse game.
Yep.
You got to vote in it.
I did.
So what we did is we had our 30 media members who vote weekly in the Maverick Media Poll. Those guys were solicited for their All-America teams, and you could pick...
Yeah. So the first team, all teams, you got to pick three teams, mm-hmm. and each team had three attackmen, three midfielders, three defenders, and then
a short stick,
and a face-off man. So in essence, what is that?
Dean
three
Bowling.
Plus three plus three. Three times three is nine. One, two, using my finger, 12.
13.
12 guys. 13?
Yeah. So
Goalie. Forgot goalie. Yes. 13.
So three attack. 3D, 3 mid, 3 specialists, and a goalie.
And so we got to pick those number of players at each position for three teams, right? To give us a grand total of 13 times 3 is
39.
39 kids. There was no honorable mention selection.
Correct.
For us, the media members. So the guys that didn't get the votes to make a first, second, or third team became honorable mention All-Americans.
Correct.
I say that because I've gotten some texts, and I've seen some things on social media being like, oh my God, so-and-so only got honorable mention, or, you know, and there's some guys that didn't get anything. It's not that they didn't get votes. It's just that at the end of the day, they didn't get enough votes to warrant, you know, being on. Well, I take that back. I think anybody that got a vote for a first, second, or third team ended up on the honorable mention All-America team. So it was fun. It was a really fun exercise, and it's been really fun to see the reaction when you have SIDs and athletic departments, you know, sending out tweets and other types of correspondence saying, congratulations to Dan Flynn and Mark Dixon, named by Inside Lacrosse as All-Americans. I thought that was pretty neat. That's a great idea by you guys.
Thank you. This has been a pet project of mine that I've been trying to get going for years, and I've been sort of championing it behind the scenes here at Inside Lacrosse. We do the Face-Off Yearbook preseason All-American team. We even pick a mid-season team. I don't understand why we haven't picked a end-of-season All-America team. And finally, with a lot of backdoor politicking, I got the powers that be here to finally put this together. Matt Kinnear and Terry Foy, especially. Terry hand-tabulated the votes by himself.
Yeah.
Very impressed.
So
and,
it
seems like it was a very fun project, and I'm happy to see it launched the way it was with ESPN's cooperation, and then also, you're right, seeing it on a lot of college websites.
It was a big deal. It was a big deal to the schools, big deal to the programs, big deal to the kids. I just wanted to, for full disclosure, name the guys I voted for first team All-American. So my first team attack was exactly the same as the way the team came out. Matt Rambo, Pat Spencer, Connor Fields. They were my three first team attackmen. My three first team midfielders, exactly the same. Sergio Salcido, Zach Currier, Connor Kelly. Those are my three first team All-American midfielders. My face-off specialist, Trevor Baptiste for Denver. My
seven for seven right now.
I'm seven for seven.
Okay.
My short stick defensive midfielder, I selected Jack Adams from Towson University. He was my first team selection. My long stick midfielder was Craig Chick from Lehigh. Guy's got unbelievable numbers and is only a sophomore for Coach Cassis up at Lehigh. I picked him. My defense was – that's different because the collective – Isaiah Davis Allen from Maryland was first team, and then Larkin Kemp from Brown, short stick D middy and long stick midfielder, respectively, which, you know, those two are great players. Defensively, I had Tim Muller from Maryland. I had Garrett Eppel from Notre Dame, and I had Ben Randall for Ohio State. And this was before his performance against Pat Spencer last night, but seeing what he did in the Big Ten tournament, you know, matching up particularly against Matt Rambo, I'm like, Randall, in my opinion, is a first-team All-American. And my goaltender, much like everybody else or the majority of us in the media, Benny Pugh out of Richmond. That's my first team. So I differed with IDA, Larkin Kemp, Brendan Hines, and Scott Furman. Those were the only differences that I had. So four guys that were selected or got the most votes, I did not vote first team. Which I don't have a problem with, though, either, because these are all great players.
I'll post Dixie's first-team All-America team on the post for the podcast, so you guys can see his picks.
Yeah.
And I'll post the whole IL team, too. But, yeah, it was a cool process, and I'm very happy to get this going. Man, it was like pulling teeth at times. Not so much this year, but in years past. I just could not. Because if you think about other sports, and, again, these are the kind of things that help make the sport grow. As small a detail as this little tiny All-America team, but in every other sport you see it, you know, college football, for instance, every media outlet does their version of the All-America team.
Yeah.
And lacrosse just hasn't been that. And I'm very happy to see this happening. And again, I want to thank all the people who voted. I want to thank Terry and Matt for making it happen in 2017. But all the first, second, and third team, as well as the honorable mention, you can find on InsideLacrosse.com and all of our tournament coverage in hashtag String King May Madness.
Booyah.
All of the String King May Madness stuff on InsideLacrosse.com, as always. All right, Dix, it's time to talk about let's talk about the games coming up this week.
Okay.
All right. So Saturday at Hofstra, ESPNU will have the games at noon and 2:30. Duke versus Ohio State, and in the second game, ND versus Denver.
Yeah, so Duke and Ohio State, last time they played was the first round of the NCAAs back in 2015. The Buckeyes go into Durham and knocked off Duke. That was a Duke team that was struggling with some health, and Ohio State team that was on a mission, that had picked up a little bit of momentum In the Big Ten tournament, they had knocked off Maryland in the semifinals, lost the championship to Johns Hopkins. But that was an Ohio State team, very, very talented. And I think this Ohio State team is better than that 2015 edition. I also think this Duke team is better than the 2015 edition of the Blue Devils. So this will be – and look, who can forget? I can't remember what year it was, but the quarterfinals at Cornell, if I'm not mistaken, Duke-Ohio State led to – it's not a rule, but it's like an unwritten rule. When you're warming up, you don't want to ever go onto the other team's half of the field. And if I remember that correctly, I think Joe Bresci still may have been at Ohio State. But I could be wrong. But I remember Duke went onto Ohio State's side of the field for during their pregame warm-up, and all hell broke loose. I don't think there was a fight, but there was definitely a a Miami Notre Dame kind of.
Did you see what happened before the Albany Syracuse game? The Yale Syracuse game.
I did. Yeah. I did. And that happened in the Hopkins Syracuse game this year as well. There was chirping before that game, and that led to a flag in pregame. And they started that game. Both teams, Syracuse and Hopkins, were man down. So I'm not saying that's going to happen between Ohio State and Duke, but that's how I remember the two playoff games that I referenced. The quarterfinal game, Duke was chirping at Ohio State and allegedly went over the midfield line. Ohio State took exception. And as officials, that drew a lot more attention to the pregame and the need for officials to get out at least a half hour before a game to make sure that things don't go haywire. And then 2 years ago at Durham when the Buckeyes knocked off the Blue Devils in the first round.
So what's your prediction for Duke, Ohio State?
I'm not doing real good on my predictions. Do I really have to pick? I mean, do you really want me to pick?
For fun.
I think just the way that they've been playing, their defense, and the different ways that they can beat you, and with Jake Withers, the face-off dot, I'll give the edge to Ohio State.
I'm going
to
take Ohio State as well.
Oh, look at you.
Game number two, Notre Dame versus Denver.
Replay of game won by Connor Cannizzaro at the buzzer. Game in Denver. Always tight when these guys play one another. I don't have the stats right in front of you. It always seems to be a one goal, if not overtime, game between Denver and Notre Dame. The Pioneers beat the Irish 2015 national semifinals. OT winner by Westberg. After Sergio Perkovic, I think, scored 10 straight goals for Notre Dame to tie the thing up. No, it's not 10 straight, but I mean, he was
I think he had 6 goals.
He was great. He was on fire. I don't know, man. This is a pick 'em, if there ever was a pick 'em. Game's being played at Hofstra, right?
It's a Hofstra.
At Hofstra. And that's the site of quarterfinal success for both these ball clubs over the last few years. Back in 2011, that's where Denver took down Hopkins to advance their first ever championship weekend. And then Notre Dame obviously beat Albany a couple of years ago. Great come-from-behind win for the Irish. And hats off to the Irish. I think they're the only – I think this decade, they're the only team that's been to the quarterfinals every single year for, like, the last 10 years, I think, something crazy like that. Man, this is a pick 'em. I don't know.
I think it's going to be very close. Denver's shaky goaltending really scares me. Yeah. Really does. They'll get possessions.
The overall health of Perkovic and Garnsey has me worried for Notre Dame.
But they played this week, and they'll have a week to rest. I'm going to take Notre Dame in this one.
Are you?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, tough. I don't know if they'll get any face-offs.
Well, that's the thing.
They're
going
to defense a lot. But
yeah, yeah. I don't have a problem with that pick. I can also see Denver winning, because of Baptiste and such. I'll tell you what, I'll go with the Irish as well. Revenge factor and 6-on-6, their defense is pretty buttoned up. I think they'll maybe have a couple of wrinkles for the Pioneers and like you said, the goaltending. But man, that is by like, a tenth of a point, taking.
Let's say an overtime win for the Irish.
You could say that, yeah. Sure. Go ahead.
Sunday's game at Delaware on ESPN2. Find those on ESPN2. First game, Towson versus Syracuse. Mm. Now, I think this all comes down to Alex Woodall and his health.
Yeah.
He's taken all but 23 faceoffs on the season for Towson. Connor Harriman is their backup, Fogo. He's 9 of 23 on the season. No. Woodall's taking, I think, 279 faceoffs.
Yeah.
And I think it really comes down. I think if he's healthy and can play like he normally would, Towson upsets Syracuse.
Well, I tell you what, it doesn't matter if he's healthy or not. He'll play. And you're just going to have to help him out a little bit more, you know. But that you look at the strength of Syracuse, and that's, you know, the 1-2 punch of Salcedo and Mariano. Towson's got the best defensive midfield unit in the country. So right there, those two might cancel themselves out, much like, you know, Towson canceled out Penn State's midfield in their win this past weekend. So then it comes down to the close defenses and the goaltending. And I think you give an edge in goaltending to Evan Malloy for Syracuse. I think defensively, straight up, Nate Yule and Towson might have a slight edge. This senior class, though, for both senior classes are on missions. You know, Syracuse doesn't want to be left out of the NCAA semis since 82, first senior class since 82. Towson wants to break that, you know, get through for the first time since 01, and they were in the quarterfinals last year against Loyola. Tough one. I'll take the dark horse. I'll take the upset. I'll go Towson.
All right, so we're on the same picks. You're just doing what I say.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. All right. And then finally, the last game of
I'll
the
I'll pick
weekend.
Different just for the hell of it in this last game.
Well, we might have different picks anyway. Albany versus Maryland, and what'll be a rematch from a one-goal game earlier this season that Maryland won in Albany, which was an interesting scenario how they had a weather. It was too cold. They came back and played later in a midweek game. Great atmosphere up there. This one will be a rematch. I think I'm going to take the Terps in this one.
Wow. I was going to say Maryland, too. Getting them a second time around, learning from the first game. You know, Maryland might be a little fresher. You know, they kind of coasted down the end of that game, whereas Albany was – but that, I mean, that's a week later. I don't think – it's not like it's a two-day turnaround or anything like that. I don't think – you know. But Maryland is just – they're just complete. You know, they're complete. Can they be beaten? Absolutely. Yeah. We've seen it a couple times this year. But, you know, Dan Morris has been a big question mark for Maryland. I think you might be looking at two of the most complete teams in the country, you know, with not a glaring weakness. Both face off well. I think huge advantage for Albany, though, in that category. Close defense, Maryland hands down. But Albany's not bad. You know, it's not like the old, you know, Wild Wild West. But, you know, given they got to win 21-20. Goaltending, gosh, I mean, I think it's equal right there. But offensively, you know, the Rambo, Heacock, Maltz, you know, how does Albany match up with those guys? And then you got to account for Connor Kelly and Rotans. You know, those are four guys in Heacock, Rambo, Rotans, and Kelly that are just, they're playing great right now. Slight edge to the Terps. Slight edge to the Terps. I think I'd personally would love Albany to make a championship weekend, see how that could alter the landscape of college lacrosse, if you will, see what it could do for a crowd, bringing more people. I mean, I love Notre Dame, really do. Appreciate their coaches, enjoy their players, but I really think that the game missed out a couple years ago when the Thompsons did not beat Notre Dame in the quarterfinals. And that, it's been 2 years in a row that Notre Dame beat Albany, but that 2014 game, 14, right? That was the one that Albany had. Big lead, you know, and it was in Baltimore that year. So it would have been wild to see what the crowd may have been like had the Thompsons made championship weekend in 2014. But I got to vote with my, you know, more logical side of me says Maryland gets through.
Yeah, it'll be very fun to watch Tim Muller on Connor Fields matchup.
Tim Muller's just, he can do it all. You know, he'll play you off ball. He can play on ball. He's Maryland's number one guy. And the, you know, that's just a close unit that's really impressive. You know, Kevin Connery, the assistant coach and defensive coordinator for the Terps, has done an amazing, amazing job. But, you know, Scott Maher against his back to
There's
Delaware,
so
his first coaching gig. He met his wife there, used to be assistant at Maryland. I mean, there's just a lot of meat on that bone.
Yeah, it'll be a great one. Definitely a great one, which may be why it's placed in that time slot. All right, Dix, it's time for our give and go this week.
Do we have a topic?
Did you peek at it? Did you see
no.
what I have? All right, here it is. The best athletes that you've seen that you wish played lacrosse. We talked the other week ago about some of the best athletes we've ever seen.
Okay.
Right? I'd like to get your opinion on who some of those guys are.
All right.
And then if they were playing lacrosse. and how they would be. And I'll give you mine first. So you
yeah,
you
go ahead. Yeah, let me.
All right, so I'm going to go with Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
I think he would be very similar to Jim Brown. Right. Or the legendary, you know, stories you hear about Jim Brown playing lacrosse. They're both physically built quite the same. I think that Bo would just, he would, things that he did that people talk about would just be freaky. As a midfielder, he would just get up and down the field and just run through and over and around people.
Yeah.
Second is Deion Sanders.
I was just thinking Neon Deion.
Playing like midfield or.
So you're going with all the multi-sport professional athletes. You're stealing them right off the top.
Well, I had time to think about this, and then you don't. And then you can think about this. You could do more. My guys are old and all retired NFL guys, basically.
Yeah.
You can come with like some more current guys.
Okay.
But I think Deion, it's just his blazing speed and quickness and shiftiness. Like he would be just, a goalie would just hand him the ball after a save, and he would just run right by everybody and around and clear the ball. And then my third would be Barry Sanders. Can you imagine him as a face-off man?
Yeah.
His low center of gravity and how strong he was and how shifty he was.
Well, the guy had great cuts, too.
Unbelievable as a midfielder who faced off. He'd be like a all-around, do-it-all midfielder. I would have loved to have been able to see him play lacrosse.
Okay.
All right.
Wow. I got my work cut out for me. I should have looked at the question before we started.
Mm-hmm.
I think one. I don't know if he'd be a good lacrosse player. It'd be fun to watch him. Would be Shaquille O'Neal. That'd be or Barkley, Charles Barkley.
Could you imagine like Shaquille O'Neal with a long pole to stand?
I'm thinking of it as an attackman,
a crease attackman,
like an attackman. You know, like setting picks and you run into him, and Barkley setting picks, you run into him, and then they roll off, and then they're there for the feed. You know, something like that. I'm going to say Barkley and Shaq.
But again, think. Imagine Shaq getting off the bus and with a pole and with his reach. And, you know, he's 7'4" or something like that. Just no one would want to come near him.
No, you'd run by him. You'd run by him. I don't think he'd be able to keep you in you know, arm's length.
He might not be able to stop Bo Jackson from running by him, but I think he'd stop.
I don't know if he could stop Jared Bernhardt from running by him.
In his prime?
In his prime? Was he? I mean,
he had great feet.
Great feet, but we're talking, you know, 60, you know, we're talking, you know, middle of the field, you know, 30-yard sprint to the box.
You're talking about freak athletes when you talk about NBA,
you're right.
Pro guys.
You're right. I know. You know, I mean, do you slide? Does Shaq need a slide? That's the question. Do you need a slide?
What it would be.
Right?
Or Barkley's another good one.
Do you shut off? Do you shut off when Shaq gets his matchup? I mean, I'm just picturing, you can't get in on Shaq, but you can run around him, and he's going to have to reach.
Yeah,
he fouls you, you know. Maybe he holds you, you know, something like that, like the old Long John, you know, the bitch whip, you know, when you grab the guy and whip him to the ground, you know. So I could see him doing that. So Shaq, Shaq would be one. Barkley, can I count them as the same? Because they're kind of like, you know.
You don't have to have just three.
Well, I don't want to run over too bad. A guy that, you know what? Peyton Manning. I'd be interested in Peyton Manning as a lacrosse player. You know, we oftentimes describe certain players as not being the strongest, not being the fastest, but he's the smartest. What would Peyton Manning look like as a lacrosse player?
I think he'd be a really good, like,
he'd be a good quarterback.
Pass first.
Yeah.
Attack.
He'd be a feeder. Yeah. Like, he'd be your kind of Darren Lowe guy from back in the day. He'd be Tim Goldstein from Cornell. David Maher, Chili Willie. Yeah, sure. So maybe Peyton Manning. I'd be interested in seeing Peyton Manning.
That's a good one.
You know, maybe as like a, you know, ex-attackman kind of thing. And he might be Shaq Stanwyck. Peyton Manning might be
coach on the field.
Yeah, kind of thing. All right, so I got Shaquille, I got Barkley. I'm thinking they're both playing attack, but you've got Shaquille as a long stick midi, which is interesting. And then you
I'd put Shaquille on a close defense.
Close defense.
Just have him stand around the goal.
All right. Yeah.
And dare people to come at him.
He could eat some shots. That's no question. I think the other guy I'd like to see play lacrosse, Mike Tyson. How about Mike Tyson?
Put him in a goal. He's got quick hands.
He could be a goalie. He could be a face-off man.
Would you get down and face-off against him?
He might bite your ear off.
Yeah, he'd do it without a helmet on.
Yeah, maybe. Mike Tyson back in the day
was the baddest man on the planet.
He didn't box. He stalked. Like he just, the guys would be back and he would just have his hands at his side or maybe up a little bit like around his waist and just he's just coming after you. Like he's just, you know, Mike Tyson. Yeah, throw Mike Tyson in there as a Fogo. He could play goalie. Short stick D Mitty. I mean, he would be
really,
I mean, he'd be a ground ball machine.
Yeah.
I put Mike Tyson.
God, you know, one would want to like get in a, like
Mike Tyson and Barry Sanders facing off. Could you imagine that?
God,
that'd be pretty cool.
They would just beat each other to.
Yeah. So those are okay. I did it. I went through.
All right. I went with Bo, Dion, and Barry Sanders, and you went with Shaq
Barkley,
Peyton Manning,
and Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Yep. That's our give and go for the week. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to share it with a friend, please. Listen to our other podcasts here, including the In the Crease podcast and the Weekend Preview podcast. And enjoy the games this week. Lots of good stuff to watch on ESPN and ESPN2. We'll talk to you next week.